Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, healthcare systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on the digital tools, solutions, strategies, and processes that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information and have fun along the way. And now, here are your hosts, Reed Smith and Chris Boyer.
All right. Welcome to the Touchpoint Podcast live from the Healthcare Marketing and Physician Strategy Summit here in lovely, warm Chicago. Ha, ha, ha. We actually got here and it's been pretty cold. Amanda, you live here, so I'm going to blame you for the weather.
It's okay. At least we didn't have the snow we had a couple weekends ago. Yeah. So we lived out there.
Yeah. We always start the show talking about the weather. You might notice that Reed isn't here with us today, and he really apologizes. He won't be able to make this show, but he's here in spirit. Just know that this conversation, I'm going to do my best to channel Reed and all of his corny dad jokes throughout the show. So,
to say the consumer interaction with technology is moving at a rapid pace is an understatement. In a matter of years, we have gone from relying on online search to adopting conversational interfaces like AI-driven smart speakers and chatbots for information. If you are attending HMPSS in Chicago later this month, be sure to check out the session Consumer Experience Starts with a Conversation with Loyal's team to learn more about how Orlando Health embraces shift with adoption of Guide, a conversational platform designed specifically for health systems. Check us out at HMPSS or schedule a demo at loyalhealth.com/demo. That is loyalhealth.com/demo.
I am sitting here with a panel of great experts, people I've come to know and really respect. And let's just go around the room and introduce each other. Amanda, let's start with you.
Yeah, hello, I'm Amanda Burry. I'm the Director of Channel Development at Kairos. My role at Kairos is really focused on our partnership channel and how do we leverage our provider match technology, which really focuses on optimizing provider data and enabling it to be leveraged for search, match, and scheduling across the enterprise. We have a really unique value proposition that we focus on the entire enterprise of the health system. So we're helping to break down those silos that are traditionally happening within healthcare so that all of the directors and VPs and everybody is coming together to make a decision on how best to serve the patient.
All right, well, we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. Go ahead.
Hello, Brian Nguyen, NRC. Mm-hmm. I'm the VP and GM at NRC Health, and thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
NRC Health is a company that uses technology to help our health system partners enable a very deep understanding of their customer, which is the patient, which is the family member, of course, the physician and staff. And that deep insight is ultimately going to be used to have some predictive ability so health systems can anticipate what the next best action is for their customer.
Awesome. Speaking of next best actions, we have Mike.
Yes. So I'm Mike Linnert. I'm the CEO of Symphony RM. We think of ourselves as providing AI-powered next best actions for health systems. And the real goal is as consumerism comes to healthcare the way it has come to other industries, people are going to realize that the most valuable asset a health system has is its database of patient relationships. Mm-hmm. And the way that you need to invest in those relationships is around value, delight, loyalty, and most importantly, next best actions. And so we help our customers make sure they have a portfolio of next best actions for everybody in the database, and then a plan for engaging customers digitally in offices and call centers across all channels.
Awesome. And last but certainly not least, Jared.
Hi, I'm Jared Wilkinson. I'm the Vice President of Hospital Partnerships for Doximity. At Doximity, we've built a social professional network for clinicians, and we have over 1 million verified members to date, including 75% of the physicians in the United States. I work with our hospital partners to help them get the word about the excellent things they're doing and to our audience.
Awesome. Awesome. So you all come from different walks of life. The one thing that unifies us is A, we're all sitting around a microphone talking on a podcast, and B, we all are looking at how hospitals and health systems are trying to improve the way they actually do their day-to-day operations. It might be for multiple audiences. We have a suite of topics that we're going to talk about today. One of the first topics is really driven – if you think about it, all of this is driven by the consumer when we talk about the consumer. And I'm going to add a topic that we didn't prep for that just to start off, because the definition of consumer or consumerism in healthcare is really, it addresses multiple audiences. We have multiple audiences that we really work with in our organizations. And I just spoke about, you know, the fact that there's multiple audiences, including customers, like the patients. There's physician audiences. There is, you know, like our employees. There's a variety of different audiences that are like key stakeholders of what we do. Now, when we look at how to address consumers and in this space here, there's a lot of things that we need as marketers, as professionals, to do our jobs better. So, going around the room really quickly, what do you guys think are like some of the critical things that we need to start to consider as we look at this in a holistic way? And that's a really open question, uh-huh. Amanda, and I'm going to toss it to you.
Okay. Well, I think that in healthcare, more than any other industry, we've become obsessed with how we're addressing consumers versus patients.
Yeah.
And when you think about other industries, they're just, everybody's just a consumer. Everybody's just a customer. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's this paradox right now happening between, do we address people as a patient or a consumer?
Right.
And as we move into this consumerism, there's more choice, there's more availability. People are wanting things on demand just like they have in other industries. And I think it's a real inflection point for healthcare systems to dramatically shift and change the way that they talk to their audiences. And just think about everybody as underneath the same umbrella as receiving care and being treated, whether they are a new patient, existing patient, creating loyalty. Mm-hmm. I just think it's all about opening up transparency and really empowering your data to help address all of those consumers across those different channels.
Mike, you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I think there's two big things driving consumerism in healthcare right mm-hmm. now. There's a huge acceleration in competition,
mm-hmm.
and both inside and outside healthcare. And the thing that we have to realize is the lifetime value of a customer in healthcare is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
We generally use around $100,000, could be higher. But what I would tell you is that in healthcare, we're still investing primarily in transactions and appointments and procedures. We're not investing against our customers as if we're going to have a 20-year life with them. And what that leaves us vulnerable to is other people who do come in and invest against the full lifetime value.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Witness Sears eventually lost to Amazon, Blockbuster, and Netflix. The other big imperative that we see happening is there's a fundamental change in business models. In the fee-for-service world, 5% of us consume 50% of the care. If you were able to get your unfair share of the chronic and acutely ill, that drove your revenue. And if you were efficient taking care of them, well, that drove your cost. But as we move into new business models, especially capitated models, we're going to have to engage the full pyramid of people, all the way from the chronic and acute to the rising risk to the perfectly healthy. And if you don't have a solution, and in our case, a portfolio of next best actions to engage at every level,
mm-hmm.
you're vulnerable to people coming in and taking away your highest valued customers.
Right. Right. Brian, do you have any thoughts?
I do. And I think that those are both great comments. And Amanda said it, you know, it's really consumerism now, the modern definition of consumerism just really is a proxy for the word choice. Right. So, and that applies to physicians on they choose where to work and if they want to stay in the field. It certainly applies to patients and consumers as they, you know, are electing to, you know, one provider versus another one, or in some cases, we have a lot of data that shows about a third of the country is deferring healthcare, and that's actually really scary. So something about the experience or the cost or the access or the convenience has turned them off to the point where they're trying to manage healthcare on their own, and then what you end up with is individuals that are, you know, more sick and more difficult to care for, and the next best actions become even more challenging to make. But I think, you know, anytime choice is at the table, then you have to understand what is most important to those that you hope to serve or earn as a customer, and you can't guess, right? So you constantly have to ask, you have to check in, you have to put those folks at the decision-making table and use that to inform design and delivery of your product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jared?
Well, one of the things I've seen is with the rise of consumerism is, of course, the patient's access to more information, and physicians have a lot of literature that they have to keep up on in their field. And not only do they have to keep up on the peer-reviewed journals and all the medical literature, but they also have to keep up on sort of this pseudoscience healthcare publications that are developing, because consumers will come into a physician's office with information that they found in, you know, a Men's Health magazine and ask them about that. And a physician may not have an idea of what that is. So it's difficult for physicians who have to keep up with all this information anyways to also keep track of all of the maybe misinformation that consumers are coming into their offices with.
Yeah, that's such a true point. And, you know, and one other thing that I want to, maybe this will pivot into our one of our topics here, is the consumers themselves, when we work with them, we kind of have to get them to change a little bit too. And this comes to an idea which I've been surfacing a lot, and it's met with a little resistance sometimes within the health system I work at. But the physician is an audience as well. Right? The physician is an audience that we need to regard. As much as we're trying to understand our customer, the patient, et cetera, we want to do the same for the customer, the physician, and understand their needs. Right? I mean, who's got a thought about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the heartbeat of Kairos, right? We're a physician-led organization. And Dr. Graham Gardner, who started our organization, would see patients that were mismatched with him because his provider data was inaccurate. Mm-hmm. So at the heart, we need to leverage providers to really manage their data and optimize it. If you're an orthopedic surgeon and you want to focus on hips and knees, we don't want to send you shoulders and wrist surgery cases. We want to make sure that you're practicing at the top of your license and really focusing on that entire profile and how it relates back to the patient. Mm-hmm. I think that the provider satisfaction is sometimes an afterthought, and we're more worried about driving traffic to the health system. But in reality, it's all about, I think you said prior, Mike said that the lifetime value of a provider is $4 million to a health system. Wow. You know, you think about retaining those providers within your network. How do you engage them? How do you make them feel like they're helping to drive the right revenue and the right patients that they want to care for into the health system? And I think that's really a core focus of what we've been focusing on with health systems. And it really seems to help improve the overall patient experience.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you think about this, oftentimes consumerism is we're trying to make it easy on the consumer, but we're shifting the complexity to maybe the provider themselves. Right, Mike?
Absolutely. And in fact, the place we see it most is that as consumerism is unleashed, it's the primary care doctors who are the powerful brands in healthcare, right? If you ask me where I bank at Wells Fargo, I broker at Schwab, but I healthcare at Dr. Rangarajan, right? And she doesn't have the scale, the tools to engage me the way these other industries do. And so we need to be focused on how is it that we both treat the physician as incredibly valuable to us, but also recognize the physician is the steward of our brand oftentimes to our end customers. And we need to be able to deliver to those physicians, here are the suggested next best actions for your patients who are coming in. And oftentimes they are health-based, but as consumerism comes, they're going to be delight and loyalty-based as well.
Yeah.
We need to make sure people enjoy when they bounce off of our health system.
I saw an interesting stat yesterday on the news that said less than 55% of Gen Xers have a primary care doctor, 67% of millennials, and 88% of baby boomers. So when you look at that wide range of people that actually are seeking care on a regular basis versus maybe only going when necessary or as an afterthought, that's going to set us up for some long-term chronic care management that you talked about in the beginning, you know, in the next 10, 20, 30 years for those patients that are just going when there's an episode and not regular maintenance or regular health.
And now, Jared, you spend a lot of time with physicians and the physician audience. That's core of what you do at Doximity. One of the things that is maybe a misconception, are physicians ready to embrace sort of the digital trends of consumerism?
I mean, I feel that they are. I mean, physicians are on all of the other platforms. Maybe their persona, you know, is a little bit different than when they're shopping at Nordstrom.com or when they're on Facebook. They're not there necessarily in a clinical mindset. But we see physicians adapting to. As a matter of fact, I think that physicians get kind of a bad name. You know, physicians were very quick to adopt things like the iPhone. They adopt technology and digital platforms where it makes sense. Where physicians get a bad name is that if the design of a platform is not acceptable, they're just going to be quick to stop using it as well. So we see, you know, physicians engaging with digital platforms, you know, across the board. And I think that it's important to understand that when you're engaging entirely, you know, with consumer marketing and not thinking about the physician audience, you're really doing a disservice because your physicians then have that lack of information again. And so when you're addressing a physician audience, you can be a lot more technical with the way that you're talking to them. And it's actually a nice way to start to use doctors as sort of the face of the organization in marketing efforts.
Are you struggling with online reputation management? Binary Health Analytics provides healthcare systems, hospitals, and physician practices a complete view into managing patient feedback from online ratings and reviews, and especially surveys. It continuously mines feedback for sediment, uncovering timely and actionable insights. Its management tools help turn these insights into an opportunity to increase patient engagement, manage reputation, and improve patient experience. To learn more about Binary Health Analytics, visit Binary Fountain online at binaryfountain.com. That is binaryfountain.com.
I think there's been at least a reckoning of health systems in terms of what they've put in front or what they've asked physicians to do by way of engaging with different technologies and portals and EMRs and all those kinds of things. Things that were really designed to create an incredible efficiency in their day, right? But it did just the opposite. So there's an acknowledgement now that those systems, they need to create efficiency. They need to allow the physician to actually have more face time with the patient. So it's like the Alexa in the exam room is a great example of this, where it can be the scribe and, use AI, use the fundamental technology there to be able to, glean some insight from unstructured data. Those are the kinds of things that I think patients want the interaction with the physician. Technology is enabling that interaction to happen. And so the physicians can be sort of, compliant and by way of utilizing new technology. They're not asked to do something different other than actually sit down and have a conversation with the patient. So all of the technology providers that we all are, have definitely a responsibility, a role to play in that. So how can we, actually create a solution that addresses the efficiency, the hours in the day, the burden on physicians, and make, democratize some data, create processes that actually, bring the patient closer to the physician. I think that's something that I know we're all probably on board with that line of thinking. Mm-hmm. That's important.
One thing I was just going to add, that if you think about, as we move to value-based care, right, we see lots of quality metrics popping up, care gaps, coding gaps. Today, what we do mostly with technology is we sort of foist those on the PCPs.
Yeah.
Meaning that they were just seeing patients who came to them. Now they're also responsible for checking the list of what percent of my diabetics have had a retinal eye exam this year, and what percent of my, men of a certain cohort have had a colonoscopy, and then they've got to decide, having checked the list, which list am I going to dial against and who am I going to ask to do the dialing. And all that lives right there at the office. Mm-hmm. The burden you've placed on that physician is enormous and way outside the scope of the top of his license.
Right.
Right. And so thinking about how we as a system actually act as a system and pull back the things that we can do better, either via digital channels, call center channels, and let the physician truly be in the business of, we will send patients to you. You interact with them, but we will scale you in a way that you can't do yourself.
Right. I mean, introducing more and more tools is not going to solve the problem, right? I mean, this conference is all about the latest in this and the latest in that. But I mean, really, ultimately, it's something in one of our one of our first episodes, our guest said, we as health systems, we're data rich but information poor. We're not really enabling the right systems, right, to allow whoever is working in our organizations to do their job that much better, which kind of leads to the challenge of data, right? So what are your thoughts on that, Amanda?
I think we talk about how health systems need to streamline the technologies.
Yeah.
There's data that lives in so many disparate places. Mm-hmm. Pulling it together and harnessing it to leverage marketing campaigns or IT protocols, those are all really hard things. And when you have all of these systems that aren't talking to the underlying EHR or maybe to a CRM or to a telehealth program, now you start to have all of these different silos of data. And I think the real goal is to leverage the data so that it's organized across the health system so that it can be quickly used to implement in multiple instances, whether that's IT, HR, marketing, digital initiatives, innovation. Mm-hmm. I think it's really all about gathering that data and streamlining it across the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Health systems can create incredible cost and process efficiency by doing exactly what Amanda just said. So if you're looking at, if I'm a health system executive looking at evaluation of partners, I want to make sure, number one, that data is going to flow freely bidirectionally between them, that they're looking for ways to glean insight from, you know, from these disparate data sources. And if you can find a vendor partner that can have data that flows through and gives you a longitudinal stream of information about an individual, then that's going to do the kinds of things that Mike was saying about, like, this sort of mass personalization, so personalization of scale.
It's not just data liquidity, right, Mike?
That's right. I would say the technology to unify the data is pretty well understood. Where I see a lot of challenges or walk around the industry is there's a cultural change that needs to happen, which is let's embrace the fact that this data is okay for us to use. Right? It's staggering the depth of data that we have in healthcare about our customers. But there's a sense that it's not okay to use it. And I'm part of a panel tomorrow where we're talking about legal and ethical uses of data.
Yeah.
But you actually can use the EMR data to go market to your own customers services that they need. Right. So one, there's a cultural kind of legal getting comfortable with that. The second is to recognize that even if we unify the data, that's not enough, right? If we push the data out to all the endpoints and all we push out is data, we rely on the fact that everybody who uses the system will look at the data and make the same decision, right? What we need to do is be able to centralize the algorithms that actually kick out actions instead of just data, right? Data is the first step, but then we need to kick out next best actions, which you'll hear me say a lot, that say, look, if you have the opportunity to bounce off of Chris today, I don't need to tell you about all of our historical interactions with them that are both EMR-based as well as potentially marketing-based, billing-based, donations, right? We can grok all that together and say, the most valuable thing to do with Chris, given that we're trying to drive long-term value, delight, and loyalty, the most valuable thing to do with Chris is X, right? Could be get him in for an annual wellness visit. It could be apologize for a bad experience he had, right? We know your appointment started 15 minutes late. That's not great. It's engaging those things.
I don't know. Do you think that again, you know, the part of this is like our organization. I work within health systems. You guys work at support health systems. Are we ready Mike, you mentioned, right, you're going to talk about the legal. It's not just the legal. I think it's a cultural thing. What do you see, Jared?
Well, I think that it's this term data, I mean, it covers so many different things.
Yeah.
And I think that the, you know, the first level of analysis of that kind of falls on a lot of the vendors that are out there helping people understand what is it that you're looking at. I mean, this could be marketing data. One of the things that I see often is that people do really well is using data to talk about or to sell, for instance, campaigns inside of their organization. So the reason why we're doing this is because this data. And you know who eats up data? It's physicians. I mean, they're very evidence-based, you know, you're evidence-based medicine. We're using evidence-based marketing and going to physicians with, here's what we're seeing, here's why we're taking these actions, and here's what you should expect to get out of it, instead of just saying, here's a bunch of data, what do you want to do with it?
Right.
And taking the analysis, taking the first step in the analysis.
So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, it's artificial intelligence, right? That's the answer to all this. We just create automated robots and, you know.
No.
The answer ultimately is yes. Right? But how we get from here to there is a really straightforward journey. You start with just look, we can't change everything all at once, right? What is a step that would really move the needle for our health system in terms of a few things? Driving this patient delight and loyalty, driving growth for us, and hopefully getting away from silos, right? Today we do have the silo-based system. We don't have to eliminate all the silos at once. If we can start by just being able to let people know, I'll use you again, Chris was discharged from the ER yesterday, and we need to get him a follow-up PCP visit within 48 hours. If I can just in that moment let the pop health team know it's not a good time to call about the colonoscopy that he needs, and let the foundation know it's not a good time to send him a request for a donation, and let the billing, the rev cycle team know, let the $25 sit for another week or two, right? Just simple things get you started. There's a lot of obvious things that you don't need AI for. Where AI comes in is as you start to scale up and you're taking into account all the things I want to do to drive your health, all the things I want to do to drive your delight, the capacity I have to see you, and then how do I drive dirty as to say financial performance for the health system, because no money, no mission. How do I take into account all those things and look and say, okay, well, what I want Chris to do is come in for an annual wellness visit, and then be able to look and say, I notice in my history of interactions with Chris, it goes email, and then phone call. And when I call him, that's generally when I get him, right? Or I wait for him to fill out an online survey that he's interested in, and that's when I get him. Hmm. Right now you have a mass of data and you're in the influence business.
You know an uncanny amount of my health background, Mike. It scares me a little bit. What are you guys' thoughts on?
Yeah, I see. I definitely see machine learning, AI, as being a terrific technology complementary to the human element of healthcare, which is it's always going to be about relationships, like loyalty, delight. That's a relationship-based exchange or interaction. That's something that you have to do right over and over and over again to hope to earn somebody's loyalty over the course of their life. And data, machine learning, all that stuff can certainly put you in the right position to have the right conversation. Absolutely. But to back up, you know, a little bit to your question on our health systems ready, assuming that, you know, we have slick processes and a lot of efficiency and great data, that's nice. But in a lot of health systems, I've been in more meetings than I can count where the chief marketing officer or the chief experience officer or the chief medical officer have, you know, been in the same room for probably the first time. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have people that there's a silo of, you know, the human element side where we don't have teams that are thinking about all being part of the same team of the health system and seeing how marketing efforts are relating to physician relation efforts and how that is relating to patient experience efforts. And that's just the socialization of what, you know, the mission and of the organization is and how their roles each complement one another.
At HealthGrades, better health gets a head start. They help millions of consumers each month to find and schedule appointments with their provider of choice. With their scheduling solutions and advanced analytics applications, they partner with more than 500 hospitals across the country to cultivate new patient relationships, improve patient access, and build customer loyalty. To learn more, visit them online at healthgrades.com. That is healthgrades.com.
I think a lot of the underlying themes that Mike and Brian are saying is really implementation of enterprise CRMs. And I want to go back to this ability to touch the patient, to drive loyalty, to look at analytics and AI, and to drive automation. That is why we're seeing a huge shift of health systems moving to an enterprise
approach to CRM,
where it's not just a marketing functionality like it's been for so many years in healthcare. Let's just run campaigns, and we're going to tag it with personalized URLs, and we're going to, you know, look at the funnel. It's really becoming about the care coordinators and closing gaps in care and looking at hypertension programs. And when a patient calls into the Access Center, knowing their name, knowing they have a $25 outstanding bill, plus they need a flu shot, plus we know they like to be connected with via text messages because they respond better. Knowing all of those little nuances are going to help to drive those powerful analytics and AI to more automation. Agents will be on the phone shorter periods of time. So there'll be better communication between patient and provider. I think that's why we're seeing this big push to enterprise CRMs, is this mere fact that there needs to be a centralized communication hub across the health system that brings in the EHR data, marketing data, medication, care gaps. It's just really kind of giving that entire patient 360 that CRMs are really built to do.
But what you're kind of describing is the fact that marketing now is shifting. The role of marketing is changing. I mean, I've been in this space for, I don't know, many years. You all have, right? We've all been here a long time. Marketing for a very long time was just about promotion, right?
It's campaign-driven.
It's just campaign-driven. We're trying to fill the funnel. We're trying to drive. How do you guys see the role of marketing shifting now? And what are some of the things that you see, you know, that how they impact the organization? Who wants to start?
Marketing is actually, as told to me by the leader of one of the very largest health systems in the country, marketers are no longer creatives, right? They're data scientists, and they're moving in that direction. So you have to be able to understand these different sources of data and interpret and take action. And then they outsource the creative stuff, right? And it used to be not that way. If you look at what the data that marketers have at their fingertips now, it's everything that the whole room has been saying so far. All those different touch points, And maybe that might point you in the right direction of, you know, some sort of automated campaign that's not going to go away anytime soon. But really what you're trying to have is this, you know, this data team that happens to work in a marketing function that is being the, you know, they're sort of sourcing all this different information and then getting it out to the right groups, if it's physicians or hospital leadership, and informing all kinds of things like M&A activity, divestiture, all those kinds of activities.
I think, look, in any other consumer service industry, marketing owns the customer experience, right? In healthcare, we're moving in that direction. But at the end of the day, we've grown up where the medical group owns the customer experience.
Oh, yeah.
And the marketing group owns, get us some new customers and flip them over to the medical group, right? And the weird thing about that is the medical group, that's not how they're trained, right? Customer experience and kind of all the different aspects of that. And they don't have access to the digital tools, right? The tools they have access to, maybe they own a call center, right? But other than that, it's office-based, sending out letters. So I think what's going to happen is as the medical groups start to better define their next best actions, marketing can go partner with them, right? And come over and say, well, now that we're in agree on what you want your patients to do, we have all these tools that can weaponize our ability to reach out. Mm. And then we'll move forward there. It'll start with care gaps, coding gaps, but then it will move forward now that we're engaging digitally and all the other channels. Mm-hmm. How do we scale it faster and move beyond just health? And I think the number one thing that will move it beyond health, we see a lot of our customers somewhere on the spectrum of fee-for-service and risk. And as they go into risk, you start with the coding gaps, the care of the preventative health things we're talking about. But then once you move to a per member per month metric, that changes your whole perception of what patient engagement looks like, mm-hmm. right? Because now it's not just health, it's everything to keep you healthy, to keep you, it goes to job training referrals, right? Food bank referrals, anything that keeps you healthy and loyal to us.
Mm-hmm. Mike, are you starting to see people go to like almost like an at-risk model as it relates to marketing? Like, we've heard people that are willing to go from a marketing standpoint at risk, you know, to depending on the performance of these type of campaigns.
Yeah, I think, well, when you were talking earlier, Brian, about people not being in the same room together, a lot of that is they all have their own P&Ls, right? They all have their own success metrics. Right. And often their success metrics are orthogonal to each other. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, they're almost competing for patient attention because I'm trying to hit mine, you're trying to hit yours. So until we abstract up and get a portfolio of metrics that then filter down and enforce the reward for coordination or enforce the behavior on coordination, we're going to be stuck a little bit. But absolutely, I think that's where we're going.
You know, I just presented earlier today, and one of the things I revealed was we did an exercise where we developed co-KPIs with patient access, ourselves, and patient experience all together. And we sat down and kind of looked at, like, how are we going to measure the success of this larger thing? Coincidentally, it was around an enterprise CRM. Mm-hmm. But still, the point is, that was an eye-opening experience because everybody had a different viewpoint of what success looks like. And for us to agree and align on that was just like, it was like almost like we were translating to one another what our own, you know, goals are and our own approaches are. Jared, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I was going to ask you if you feel like that's because marketing isn't playing a big enough role in the organization, because they're not involved in some of those higher level meetings. I see the people that do it really well have marketing kind of embedded in the culture throughout because they do more than just execute campaigns. I mean, if you think about it, they're partly operations because the first access the patient is going to have is on your digital properties and making sure that you're in the right properties, right? People talk about, well, we're going to build this urgent care clinic over here. Well, marketers have to decide what channels are you going to be on? Where are people going to be? It's the same thing as analyzing a population. And I think that when you embed the marketers throughout the culture in all of those different elements and not just make a decision and then to give it to marketing to say, here's what we're doing, now go run with it, then I see that the outcomes are much better as a result of that.
What?
Well, I was just going to say we've seen an emerging trend of patient experience now funneling up through marketing leadership, and that which is the way it would be right in most other industries, mm-hmm. where the experience is synonymous with your brand experience and any interaction with the product. But there's probably only, you know, we count on maybe two hands the amount of organizations that have sort of a chief consumer officer or a chief marketing officer that has patient experience rolled through them. That's going to be something that is going to be interesting to watch. You know, I think, Mike, you said that marketing owns a patient experience, and I asked that very question of a Shushmet audience on a national webcast. And keep in mind, these are all marketers, right? And half said, I don't know, right? So we've got half of the audience that should be owning this, not knowing that they own it or should. So, you know, so there is a bit of a gap there that we have to address.
But we handicap them too, because they don't get the data they need to own it well,
right?
Mm. Right? They don't get access to the EMR data. They don't get the steady stream of payer files that are coming.
Do you think, though, there's also a rotation? This might be controversial in saying a rotation of healthcare marketers that need to be rotated into different roles, right? Like, we're at this booming age of the technologists, and a lot of the people that are still in many of these marketing roles are not technologists, but they were building creative campaigns around TV and billboards and radio spots, and they really don't understand and how to leverage the data that takes the organization to the next role. But they also might be scared of bringing those people in. So, you know, do you guys see that across different organizations? Maybe nobody wants to answer, and I'm going to control what you're saying.
No, we like controversy, so that's totally fine here. But what are your perspective on?
Well, I would say but most of the marketing people said haven't been given the data to access, and so we don't really know, but I think they do know that the data is invaluable, and if we can just get it to them, and I will say, having worked in other consumer service industries, usually the legal team is in the business of saying, no, but, or here's how we can get around that. I think there's a lot of fear of HIPAA, and so there's a lot of marketing that isn't being done that's actually perfectly reasonable, perfectly fits within the regulation, and most importantly, within the patient's best interest. And so I think as marketing steps into that role, we'll start to figure out a lot more. But today, it is hard for a lot of the marketing teams to get the data from the EMR to allow them to do things.
Here we are at this conference. There's a lot of sessions that are talking all about this, and there are however many thousand attendees here that will be attending these sessions. These people want to innovate. But when they go back to their organizations, they're met with barriers. So it's not necessarily the marketers per se. It's just the idea of where marketing exists in a lot of these organizations. It's really like a fundamental leadership change at the hospital level to understand that, you know, all of the things that we're talking about, there are sessions on, and people will attend those sessions, and they'll take those ideas back, and they'll be met with resistance at all levels. And Chris is laughing because he's...
You're so right. I mean, I go back to the fundamental, like, what's the definition of marketing? The five P's of marketing, or the four P's of marketing, right? Price, product, placement, and promotion. In most health systems, marketing is only promotion. Mm-hmm. Who does pricing? The service lines. Who does product? The service lines. Who does pricing? Well, maybe revenue rev cycle does pricing. And who does placement? Strategic planning, right? And these people don't meet with each other. So how do we evolve? I don't know, Amanda, back to your controversy point. It could be that there needs to be, we need to, you know, re-up our own skills, our own capabilities. There are a lot of marketers that are in these sessions, though, that are really eager to take this back. But they are met with resistance. They are met with data gaps. They are met with roadblocks within the organization. So what are your thoughts, Brian?
What Jared said is really interesting on you know, there's going to be a lot of energy that comes out of this week, and then there's going to be hurdles. There's going to be, you know, landmines back at the organization, and then the energy kind of fizzles out. We see when out-of-industry hires come into industry, and, you know, we've got consumer packaged goods folks, hospitality folks that come into these marketing leadership roles, with a lot of steam, and I've seen it many times, sort of fizzle out. You know, they get you know, hamstrung by all of the healthcare stuff, and they get that curse of being, we're so unique and it doesn't apply here. It is really untrue. It's a fallacy, I believe. You know, that things other industries do can't be done in healthcare. With respect to things like HIPAA and patient privacy, that's nuanced, but it can be done.
I'd also add, you know, to having grown up in other industries and come to healthcare about 4 or 5 years ago, I will say marketing and healthcare is just different, right? There's a lot more to the complexity of, well, just because I can say something, should I say it, right? And also just because I can drive demand, should I, right? Are we ready for it? So for example, you might observe that, hey, we've got a lot of people who are eligible for physicals, be high value to them, high value to us. But just as Kairos probably knows, just because the PCP schedule showed 50% capacity doesn't mean you can schedule a physical anytime soon, right? And so to your point, Chris, about they don't control product, until you actually see the friction and see some things go wrong, you may not realize what all the product encompasses, right? And it truly is the scheduling templates. It's getting to the right physician, not just to any physician. It's, right, there's a lot of complexity on getting the product back in. And I think as we bring in more marketers, and in particular direct marketers, I think they can accelerate some of the things, but you, just like capitalism, you can't just leave it unregulated, right? We're gonna need people just steeped in healthcare to oversee this kind of onslaught of digital marketing that's coming.
Interesting.
I think the scheduling is, it's one of the hardest things. And it, who owns that now? Marketing, when you talk about like these access points and product or this, you know, this opening of this door, that who owns it? We're seeing like, does marketing own it? Does access own it? Does IT own it? Because it involves scheduling templates and optimization. And that's, again, something that's outside of the normal marketer's realm of dealing with, but they're having to learn and know, like, wow, these templates in Epic are really hard to understand, and we have many of them, and who does that fall under? Like, it's a whole new ballgame for everybody.
We've grown up where a lot of these, and I'll keep going back to PCPs just because there's a lot of them, to give you an example, right? They were small practices. Mm-hmm. All their scheduling was contained here in-house. Epic, Cerner, others have tried to templatize their scheduling, but a lot of their scheduling was just, you know, I hired my friend at the front desk who knows that, you know, we eat lunch between here and here, except on Wednesdays if I have to pick up my son, and, you know, I don't like to do more than two annual wells a day because they're exhausting, but on Friday I'll do a third. Right? We just had that in our heads, and because it was in our heads, if a patient called in and had an emergency, we could overwrite it because we knew between us. But if you try to templatize and centralize scheduling and make scheduling digitally available, you've got to capture all that logic. And the first time you try to capture it, what you generally find is you don't have any appointments left. And then you're in a negotiation for where are we on the culture? How much can we push? What's acceptable to people? How do we negotiate this in a way that's both physician and patient friendly?
A lot of what we do is change management and data governance. It's a lot about going in and educating about opening up those different slots and optimizing the profile and optimizing the templates, because it is a lot of change management across the organization and across the different service lines. And that is a large majority of the work that we do internally.
It's interesting as we're talking about scheduling difficulties and good and bad data and you know, inefficient systems and all that kind of stuff. And the other side of that, there's just this person that needs a physical, right? And they're just trying to schedule an appointment. And they're weeks out, months out, have no idea how much it's going to cost, whatever it may be. And I get that stuff. It is just, they just won't tolerate that forever, right? They've been tolerating it to date. How much longer can we expect
that? One thing that actually even makes it more challenging, the first time they try centralized scheduling or they try scheduling over the web and they can't get the appointment they want, they call the PCP office because they know them there. They get squeezed in. Mm-hmm. And we've just taught them that don't use that channel, right?
Yeah,
you can get what you want going around it, which defeats the purpose.
Well, and that's why I think a lot of millennials and Gen Xers are starting to do concierge medicine, like One Medical, in places where I just pay an annual fee and I can go to the physician X times a year. That's a huge thing in Chicago and New York and a lot of big cities, is I would rather just pay an annual fee to be a subscriber to see my physician on call whenever I need it.
Right.
I think that is something, another channel we have not addressed here, but I think that on-care concierge level of medicine is going to be something that's going to continue to grow in cities.
Which a question gets asked a lot, how do we address the millennial population, the Gen Z population? How do we sort of make money off of millennials before they, you know, actually age and have some more serious health needs? And it's probably going to be through subscription-based services like
virtual
that.
Visits.
They're a trained consumer in that regard with all the other services they use. And you just have this on-demand, use it when I need it, pay an annual monthly fee, whatever it may be. And then they have the access that they want. They understand the cost. And even if they're not using it, the health system is still getting the revenue for it.
So it comes full circle, right? It's about the consumer. And it's about consumerism, what we started this podcast with.
Hi, this is Bobby Ratu, storyteller. I would like to invite you to check out my show called Intersection Podcast, a collection of stories involving healthcare, public policy, and social issues. Intersection is an opportunity to recontextualize stories into a broader viewpoint, breaking away from a short tweet, social media video, a status update, and diving further into longer-form conversations surrounding great storytelling. Search for Intersection Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or go to intersectionpodcast.com to subscribe. I hope you will join us.
Well, that's been it's been a really great conversation, guys. Really good podcast. But for those of you who may have listened to the show before, you know we always end the show on a different tact. Okay, so this has been great stuff. We'll definitely circle around with everybody afterwards here. But what we like to end the show with is recommendations. Like, you know, you all come from your own individual walks of life. You know, bring some consumerism, bring some personalization to you. What do you have as a recommendation that you can offer to our audience today, Amanda?
Well, as a Chicago native born and raised, and we're here in Chicago this week, I would advise everybody to walk across the river and do the river walk. It goes from the lake all the way down the river, and it's a good if you want to have a walking session with somebody. But there was a multi-million dollar project done to revitalize the river, and everybody should take advantage of it while they're in town.
Nice. That's great. Like, do a session walking down the river.
Walking session.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jared, do you have a recommendation?
Man, I have a lot, but I'm going to keep it to one, and that's an app.
Okay.
It's an app that you could download for a flight or on the way home. It's called Elevate, and Elevate is a brain training app, so there are several of these out there. This is a subscription-based one, but I found it to be very useful. It's very bite-sized. It sends you a reminder every day to do these little brain training, and it includes things like math skills, writing, speaking, to name a few. And so I've found, like, for instance, I need help with my math skills. And these are all timed events. And so you go in and you try to do these math problems really quickly. And I've really enjoyed I've had it for about a month now.
Awesome. We all need good brain training apps. Mike, do you have a recommendation?
Mine is vacation.
Oh,
I think in healthcare, we work really hard. We are solving problems that are very difficult. They mean a lot, so get away. And if I had a specific vacation recommendation, I vacationed with just one of my daughters, just the two of us a couple years ago. Probably best vacation I ever took. Got to know her in a way I didn't know her, and I'm taking another one of my kids this year.
Nice. Where are you going?
She wanted to go. My first daughter went to Rome. My second daughter wanted to go to a Holiday Inn with a good pool and putt-putt course. but we settled on a dude ranch.
Oh, nice. Sweet. That sounds like fun. Okay, Brian, no pressure.
I'm going to recommend a book.
Oh.
So it's a Swedish writer. The book is called The 100-Year-Old Man Who Jumped Out the Window and Disappeared. And it's a really, really funny book. This gentleman happens into some of the most significant events in the 20th century throughout his life and affects them all in a way that he has no idea. And it's just a really fun and good read. So, you know,
awesome.
We're all on planes a lot. So, you know, tuck that one away and be done with it in one trip.
That's awesome. Well, my recommendation is going to be a little bit like yours, Amanda, because I came to Chicago prior to this conference with my wife and we went out on one of the architectural boat tours. And I'm telling you, when I went into it, I was fully ready to embrace that it was going to be a very touristy thing, whatever. But a lot of people have been saying it's really good. TripAdvisor was number one rated. I'm telling you, it was probably the coolest thing we could have ever done. We did a 75-minute tour on a boat. I guess the tour guide was very knowledgeable. I'm sure half of it was BS, but whatever. He was very entertaining. And it was just amazing to go down the river and just look at all the architecture, kind of go around, come back. It was just a really great way to spend the day. So if you ever make it to Chicago, not only walk the river walk, but then get yourself on one of those boats and do the architectural
tour.
Number
one thing I do with family and friends when they're in town is the architectural boat tour.
Yeah, it's just so amazing.
Thanks for that as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, good. All right, guys, thank you so much. This has been a really great conversation. People that are listening in may want to know a little bit more about you online. So if you can maybe share like ways they can reach out to you, what's the best way they can get a hold of you, Amanda?
Twitter.
Okay.
Chiaogal Chicago. CIAOGAL Chicago.
Nice.
Or you can find me on LinkedIn at Amanda Burry.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, LinkedIn's a great way to reach out. Shoot my email and everything is on there too. I think maybe even my mobile. So that's a good place to go.
Great.
Brian Wynn.
Awesome.
Yep, our company website, which is symphonyrm.com, or I'm on LinkedIn as well, both at SymphonyRM on LinkedIn and Mike Leonard.
Jared?
And I can be found on LinkedIn, Jared Wilkinson, and you can always visit doximity.com/hospitals to learn more.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll definitely link to all of this on our show notes.
Nobody,
so those of you listening.
Nobody said Tinder.
Nobody said Tinder, thank goodness.
Snapchat.
No, but really appreciate the conversation. And I know some of you are going to be presenting and your companies are going to be here throughout the rest of the week. I'm really looking forward to all of the conversations that are going to happen. And it's just great. It's great to be in an audience and a group of people that are just smart and really are trying to do the right things. So Reed is here in spirit, but on behalf of Reed Smith, I'm Chris Boyer, and we'll see you all next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.